Hello, citizens of the Comedy Film Nerds universe. The Dark Universe.
Comedy Film Nerds Dark Universe.
Dark Universe, Chris.
That's what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, episode 374 is Risen from the Dead.
It is. It's going to be mummy-tastic.
It's going to be so mummified. We took this episode and we wrapped it.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, took all the organs out.
Took all the organs
put them in
out.
Jars.
Did a weird ceremony.
And
it rose up from your backyard, and
here
it is.
It did. And then it somehow managed to make other zombies. So, that's great.
Doesn't make any sense, but we're excited to talk about it.
So we're going to be talking about The Mummy. We're going to be talking about It Comes at Night. We're going to be talking about the trailers of Black Panther and Cars 3.
Oh, shit.
And a couple cool DVDs and what's coming out this week.
Excited for that John Wick Chapter 2 DVD.
You know what?
Talk about that.
It's it's one of those movies that I missed when it came out. I want to see it though.
I'm into John Wick. Anyway, we'll save that for later in the show.
But should we talk about the Patreon?
We should talk about the Patreon, you guys. So we
hit that first goal. Thank you so much.
You've stemmed the bleeding, which means we are going to be doing 2 spoiler eps a month. Mm-hmm. We will do a Mummy spoiler ep.
Yep.
And
while we're still angry.
While we're while we're seething rage. Oh, God, I saw that movie like Thursday or Friday, and I'm still mad. Anyway, here's what we're going to do, guys, just as a little extra bonus to the Patreon backers. The Mummy spoiler ep will drop on iTunes for everybody to listen on Thursday morning.
Uh-huh.
But we'll put the Mummy spoiler ep, you'll get it early if you're a Patreon backer.
What level, Graham?
Well, I don't know. What do you think?
Should we make that $10 tier more valuable?
let's be nice. We'll do 5.
We'll do 5. All right.
$5 level.
You've sold me.
So the $5 level. People, you're going to get it. If you go to Patreon, you'll hear it later, quickly, today. Today being June 13th.
Tuesday,
June 13th. It will drop. Mm-hmm. And also, those of you on the $5 levels, your name is in the credits.
Yeah.
You get the credits of the YouTube video. So go to youtube.com/comedyfilmnerds and you can see your name in the credits. That's a cool thing. That's one of the things you get the $5 level.
It's awesome. And it really helps us grow the company. Like you said, the first 1,000 kind of stem the bleeding from earbuds. The next 1,000 will actually stabilize us and enable us to hire the part-time employee so we can create more content and clean up some of the content that we have on the site and start to do some improvements and upgrades.
In addition, guys, obviously we want to produce and direct and make more feature films. That's the big goal. We also want to put up more short form content on the YouTube page.
And every tier, every goal on Patreon gets us closer to those things. And so the next one is the part-time employee that can help out with all the everything from the shipping to running the company on the day-to-day operational basis.
Yeah. So, getting me vegan smoothies.
And getting Graham vegan smoothies. It's a worthwhile goal. Help us get there. So we're at about a little over 1,000 right now. We need to get to that 2,000. And like we said, look, if you don't have 10, you don't have 5, 1 or 2 helps. Anything helps.
It's really awesome how you guys have been supporting the show anyway. Mm-hmm. It's a cool thing, and we're happy to put – and as we did, we released the whole – so the whole video, so this regular episode, the whole video of it, you can only see that on Patreon.
Right.
And we release clips, obviously, for free on the YouTube channel. Aaron, our producer, just gave me the international symbol for – put your face closer to the microphone. It always looks like he's doing the air mask thing on planes. Like,
oh, right.
Or your hand stinks or something. Now he's making weird hand gestures. I don't know what he's doing. He's lost his
shit. Put your mask on before your child's?
Yeah.
That's what he's doing?
Exactly. Talking to your microphone before your child's. Well, let's
introduce our guest.
Let's introduce our guest. First time guest.
Yes. And a filmmaker. Made many, many films. Specializes in the genre of horror. However, did work with Angelina Jolie on a drama. Ladies and gentlemen, the director of The Stand, if I remember correctly. And what was the Angelina Jolie movie?
Unbroken.
Oh,
ladies
she
and gentlemen,
directed, yeah.
She directed. Mick Garris.
Thank you for having me here, guys.
And now we didn't mention your podcast, so you have a podcast, Podcast One. What's the name of that?
It's called Postmortem with Mick Garris. We wanted to call it Postmortem with Brad Pitt, but it didn't work.
Yes. Didn't test well?
No.
So that's a fairly new show, right? You've been doing...
Yeah, we just recorded our 10th one, and it's every other week. It's on iTunes and on Podcast One and all of that stuff, as you guys know.
Nice. Now, before we start talking about The Mummy, we have to talk to you about your attempts to write a mummy movie. And tell us about
I not
that.
Only attempted, I did write them, but yes. They just never got made.
Yeah. So, but what happened? Was that in between Brendan Fraser and now, or like when was
it? It was pre-Brendan Fraser.
It was pre-Brendan Fraser.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So tell us about what happened there.
Well, I was, I had directed The Stand and mm-hmm. was working on developing a film that Stephen King wrote that Steven Spielberg was going to produce. It was going to be a big budget studio movie that ended up falling apart. But this was an
really
assignment.
In Hollywood?
Yes. Go figure.
Yeah.
So this was just something George Romero had been developing. Well, actually, the first one I did was they wanted to do Clive Barker's The Mummy. That was all they cared
really?
About was Clive Barker's name in the title as The Mummy mm-hmm. and or doing The Mummy. And so he came up with a really typically Barkerian, outrageous story about twisted sexuality that was based in a museum in Beverly Hills. And so he had an incredible story.
I want to see this movie
I
now.
I really want to see this mummy movie.
I promise you want to see this movie. And so he came up with the story idea and pretty much just threw the ball to me, and I did the screenplay for him to direct. Mm-hmm. And this was before he became so disillusioned with Hollywood that he never wanted to direct again. And it was very twisted and thought, this Universal is never going to make this fucking movie. There's no way in hell Universal is going to make Clive Barker's The Mummy. Do you know what you're asking for when you ask for Clive Barker's The Mummy? So I wrote the script, got paid, and as I imagined, it never got anywhere near production. And then a couple of years later, George Romero had been developing The Mummy as a horror film and was they were close to green-lighting it, but they still felt it was not quite in shape. He got a solid offer to do another Living Dead movie, mm-hmm. which they said, okay, if you're going to do that, then we have to move on without you in this. And he was very torn because he loved this project, doing The Mummy.
It was what was the story on the second one?
Well, the second one, it was, we actually had...
Was there a lot of deviant sexual behavior on this one?
Not with the Romero one, not so much. This was, but it was very much, it was a $15 million horror movie that the mm-hmm. studio was very committed to doing. Mm-hmm. And they were close, and it had Karras and it had Imhotep both in it, mm-hmm. and Princess Aung San Aman. So it paid homage to the original Mummy movies, particularly the Karloff one, mm-hmm. As well as a couple of the sequels, but it was very contemporary and very horrific. So we were close to going, George was close to going to that. He decided he had to take the greenlit deal, and so he gave up The Mummy. The greenlit deal fell through. And after
they wouldn't let you step in and direct it?
Well, that's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I was hired to come in, rewrite the script, and direct the movie at that mm-hmm. point, after George had already left and
right.
was embroiled in the other deal. So when that happened, I felt horrible about that, but I was well into the process of doing it. So I think I did two or three drafts of the script, and I had done location scouting to British Columbia, which stands in beautifully for Egypt. So
same climate,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, I thought I was, you know, looking for pyramids, and
there's
just
so
never
much
saw
sand up in Canada.
It's amazing. So that would have happened, except Sid Sheinberg, who was running Universal at the time, was being relieved of his duties of running the studio, and they gave him a parachute deal where he has a production company called The Bubble Factory, I think it was. And so he had a choice of any of the projects in the pipeline. So he chose The Mummy. And at first, it was going to be My Mummy, and then Stephen Sommers came in and pitched The Raiders of the Lost Mummy that
right.
they ended up making with Brendan Fraser as a giant action-adventure pseudo-Spielberg film, mm-hmm. rather than the little independent-style horror movie that was going
right.
to be made. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened with The Mummy. There's a very long story about what happened to The Mummy. It turned into something. It morphed.
Right, it sure did.
Yeah, it just made all of us go, oh, man. Like, I wish we would have had your mummies. Yeah.
So do I.
Even the Clive Barker mummy I would have loved to have seen.
I want to be all over. Yeah. I mean,
That must have been so weird and crazy and creepy.
It was, and Clive is the sweetest guy in the world. And we've worked together a few times, and he's such a great human being. And his most of the people within the genre that I know, and I know a lot of them, are really wonderfully sweet human beings, because they get it out. It's the repressed ones you got to worry about.
A guy that can create a character that's got nails in his face, he's not going to go nuts.
It's all on the page. I'm good.
He's healthy.
Yeah. He's absolutely healthy. It's the people that tell you, oh, no, I'm fine. Those people are fucking nuts.
Next door?
They're wing nuts.
So now it's interesting, too, that direction for like Raiders of the Lost Mummy, like you said, because that's really what that movie is.
Yeah.
It's a throwback to the serials of that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an action-adventure movie.
With some horror elements to it, but ultimately it's an action adventure movie.
Right.
But you know, it worked.
It was a huge success.
It was a huge success.
They made three of them,
And it was. I thought it was a fun time at the movies. It was a way to kind of reintroduce, you know, that kind of world of mummy and action and Spielbergian, you know, Raiders type of a film. The sequels, not so much, but I think the first one definitely had its charms for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the movies we've been talking about were better than the movie we just saw over the weekend.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I cannot believe how bad this movie was. And I don't even know where to begin. There were so many things wrong with this movie. And one of the generalized problems was that this forced world building, it's like where everything has to be a connected universe now. It's like, well, this is the dark universe. We're going to introduce Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll, and now we're going to make him go Mr. Hyde for no reason at all in this movie. And that's even just where to begin where this movie goes wrong.
Penny Dreadful did that well. You know, they got all of those interwoven.
We also had League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the comics.
Right. Yeah,
and there were ways that actually to do it, to put all this together properly. This was not one of them. So you also have this oh, no, it's going to be great. We're going to have this homage to all these other movies that are upcoming, and we're going to put teasers and, you know, all these kind of like Easter eggs and none of them worked. Absolutely none of them. Like the creature from the Black Lagoon's hand in a jar. All right, I got it. A vampire skull. But even just watching Russell Crowe ham it up so much to the camera, it was like, well, he's getting a lot of time. I think this is supposed to be a mummy movie, right? Why is Russell Crowe in this?
Why has
so
it suddenly
much?
Become a Dr. Jekyll?
Yeah, why is it a movie? Yeah, yeah. And what you have to understand, Hollywood, is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is based on decades and thousands of interconnected stories that already exist. So there's a rather large amount to pull from. You know, it's a lot different than just throwing something together that you are like, well, we got to put this together. We got to make this connect and we got to make this connect. And they don't always have to. You can make a mummy movie that's just a mummy movie. You really can.
Well, the thing that's so insane about this is
haven't even started on Tom Cruise yet, but go ahead.
So much of the blame has to go to the giant corporate studio mentality that said, we need our universe.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know, Marvel's got one. DC's trying to get one. We got to create one. And again, you bring up such a great point. The Marvel universe, it's decades of every week. There's new Marvel comics being written.
And they've always crossed over.
And you have new comic book fans every day going, there's a 10-year-old kid right now going in their first comic book store going,
Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Has anyone been like giving a shit about these other than horror movie fans than Die Hard? Like, sure, I watched the Boris Karloff movies on TV as a kid on a late night whatever. Like, okay, but are there tens of millions of people who are just like,
I want to see this interconnected again.
What?
The only thing this movie was missing was Abbott and Costello.
I know. It's like, really,
any movie needs Abbott.
Right?
Of course. You can always make a movie better with Abbott and Costello.
In this case, you're absolutely correct.
Oh, my God. It's, and just anything. This was one of – it was like the Pirates of the Caribbean type storytelling, too. It was like just, well, just random events, random rules. And if we set up a rule, we're going to break it. Like all this, okay, well, there's a magic dagger, but it's in two pieces. Mummies can make zombies now. And wait, Mercury taps down the power of mummies. And like it was just one random thing after another. And then and Tom Cruise in the middle of it playing a character that I don't even think he knew what he was playing.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like all of these actors were like, well, I'm going to give it a shot here. I'm going to do my best.
Instead of watching a movie, it was like we talked about this before. It was just like watching people at work. Like, you know, if you watch somebody at a desk, you know, like, or get your burger at a fast food place, it's like, well, that's their job. You
just bring your kids to work day.
Yeah, it's really what it looked like. It just looked like, well, I'm just watching people at work. They're not really doing anything that they're passionate or care about.
And it's funny because
the real monsters in this movie are the people that made it.
They need to be put back into a crypt.
Yes. Yes.
Well, because I feel like so it was written by Christopher McQuarrie, who
one of the writers.
Well, yeah, there was a bunch of writers. You can't pin this on him at all.
No.
So he did,
there are only three credited, but usually that means there's probably another six that weren't.
Yeah.
Easy.
And wasn't it directed by Alex Kurtzman? Huge talent. Transformers. That's all you need to say.
Right. And so.
And the Star Trek reboots. McQuarrie
directed.
Okay, you could say that again. you could go through a litany of horrible things he's done.
Transformers, it's a fine universe. So McQuarrie directed Tom Cruise and Jack Reacher and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which is why the trailer made it everyone the joke online immediately when this trailer dropped was they were calling it Mummy Impossible.
Yes.
Like everyone made that joke immediately because it just looks like
if Tom Cruise could just do airplane scenes, I think he'd have a good movie. Because that's what it was. And that was the main part of the trailer was the airplane scene.
Yeah. I can't even. I mean, we'll go into the detail in the spoiler up, the specifics of what the problems were. I was mad watching this movie. It made me mad.
Because it was such a missed opportunity.
Well, yeah, it could be fun. Like the first Brendan Fraser movie I thought was fun.
Yeah, I agree.
It was fun. Uh-huh. I would love to see the darker versions make that you worked on and talked about.
Yeah, well, they were horror movies.
Right.
You know,
right.
And to decide even back then to make an action adventure like they did. Now, I haven't seen the new Mummy and it's unlikely that I will after meeting you guys.
But
that's our
saved you like
that's
eight,
our goal.
Yeah, we're saved you 12 bucks.
Well, just the trailer gave me a push away from the movie theater, you know, because it's a big action adventure movie, and that's not how I like my monsters.
Right.
You know.
Well, and here's the thing: it fails as a big action adventure movie too. That's what
even
like
worse.
Like yeah, it not only fails as a horror movie, it fails as a big action adventure movie. And you know, I'll tell you, there's something about Tom Cruise too. You know, when he does genre. It's always touch and go or hit or miss. Like when you look at like a movie like this, he was completely like he didn't even belong in this film. Mm-hmm. Well, no one belonged in this film, but specifically Tom Cruise. But also
the Mummy didn't.
Yeah,
belong.
The Mummy belonged in this film. But if you look at Tom Cruise's other like genre pieces, everything from Legend to you know Interview with a Vampire, it doesn't. He just has that. Kind of like everything from Risky Business to the Mission Impossible movies. Like, oh, that's where I want Tom Cruise. Or
this new
Born on the 4th of July. That's where I want
American
Tom Cruise.
Made, the
American
trailer Made. We talk about.
Exactly. That's where, okay, I see Tom Pilot. Cruise in this movie. But anything, like, I don't know what happened where Tom Cruise just said, I want to do a monster movie or just Universal threw so much money at him. It's like, we need you in the Mummy movie.
Universal said...
And bring your team.
Yeah, exactly. Universal said we're starting this Dark Universe thing.
Right.
So we're gonna just throw stacks of money at everybody.
And we're gonna make sure you know it's Dark Universe. We're gonna put it in the trailer.
In the trailer, and also in the opening credits.
Yeah,
the Universal the Universal thing rolls on the planet. You know, the Universal, and then it turns dark and it goes Dark Universe.
Yeah, even Marvel doesn't do that.
Come on.
I'm like we know what you're trying to do. Stop.
So yeah, it. I was mad that. It's moments like this where I get mad about having to do this podcast.
Like entertainment shouldn't enrage you.
I know it shouldn't. It shouldn't. Right? Again, like the first Brendan Fraser movie. I remember when that came out. It had some special effects we hadn't really seen before. I was like, okay, great. It's like you said, it's Raiders of the Lost Mummy.
Yes.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was
fun. It was campy. It knew what it was.
Go for it. Mm-hmm. Just like we talk about with. Wonder Woman or Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever. Right. They're fun movies. Then maybe they try to make some points or some social commentary, which is great. But ultimately,
Fun and they're well put together with some love and passion.
You got some 2 hours of escapism. That's what we've all ever wanted since the time we were kids to go to the movie theater and get. When I'm sitting there mad, and I was in comfortable seats. I was in a reclining chair.
Oh, my God. You were at the food theater?
I didn't go to the food theater. Okay. But I know Amy Miller's going to get mad at this. I did sneak in my hippie food into the theater because I can't eat a cheese pizza. I'm in this comfortable chair because there's some theaters near me where they have the reclining seats that don't have a full menu, but they have really nice comfortable seats. So I'm like, well, then I'll enjoy this. Yeah. And I was just getting so mad and annoyed, and I was like, I could be.
Did you find as the angrier you got, the higher you put the seat up? Like
No, I put it lower. I was like, I hope I fall asleep. I was like, well, at least I could get a comfortable nap in.
But it was too bombastic for that.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I could see, I think it's in theaters, that movie, The Hero with Sam Elliott. You know, I've seen the trailer for that movie, and I'm sure it's getting a limited release or whatever. And I was like, God, I wish I was supporting that film.
Right. And,
you know,
I mean, even when you start off with this movie, like Tom Cruise, that like the writers don't even know what his character or job is. Like, all right, well, wait, you're a scout. Wait, you're a soldier, you're special operations, wait, you're a treasure hunter, wait, you're a thief. Like, what? Okay, can you pick one? Can you just...
Well, yeah, any of them.
Yeah, what exactly are you doing? And my favorite part of the movie, though, this is not a spoiler, though, was that they make a big deal of getting these antiquities out of these war zones where these are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So clearly, when they find the sarcophagus, this is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So... when the plane crashes, which is in the trailer, there's two guys with flashlights looking for it. Really? Hundreds of millions of dollars in antiquities? There's two guys with flashlights looking for it? That would have been like the Thor hammer with S.H.I.E.L.D. just, you know, creating this entire thing, looking for this thing that was worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
It can't even.
So, I mean, and like there's moments like that every 5 minutes in this film where it just like, really? Really? And we'll go into it more in the spoiler, especially the ending, which had me laughing out loud.
Yeah.
Out loud.
I think I yelled, oh, come on. Yeah. Like, I think, and then these high school kids laughed.
Yeah.
All right.
The film's tagline, "Welcome to the New World of Gods and Monsters," is a quote from Bride of Frankenstein, 1935, which was also produced by Universal. And they have all of these next films in the pipeline, Bride of Frankenstein. And Mick, I'm sure you're aware of, like, what's in the pipeline for Dark Universe.
Yeah, well, Bride of Frankenstein is being made by Bill Condon, who did Gods and Monsters with Clive. Mm-hmm. And he has such a love and respect for. I worked with him. I brought him in on a TV show I was one of the producers of called The Others, which you probably don't remember. But
so this might be Dark Universe's Wonder Woman.
I have hope. You know, this could actually, because maybe it'll actually be a gothic horror film.
Right.
You know, this is a guy who respects those roots. And obviously, having touched on Bride of Frankenstein in Gods and Monsters, in depicting James Whale and all of that, that's about making Bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
And so... that's the kind of Dark Universe movie I want to see. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling it's going to be gigantic. And, you know, to me personally, the bigger the budget of a movie, kind of the less interested I am in it.
Well, for horror, for sure, that's been
For horror.
That's definitely been the trend. The most interesting things that are going on in horror right now are by far indie.
By far.
Speaking of that, let's talk about the movie that you saw, It Comes at Night, which is an indie horror movie.
Very much so. Very dark, very grim.
Second feature by Trey Edward Schultz, and it premiered this year at the Overlook Film Festival.
Which I was at, but I didn't see it there. Mm-hmm. I saw this in my friendly neighborhood theater. Mm-hmm. The one thing is, though, nothing comes at night.
Really?
I waited.
It comes in the afternoon. Yeah. Yes. It comes at late morning.
Came for tea. Yeah.
It's very atmospheric, and that's what it mostly has to offer. I'm a big fan of Joel Edgerton, who is the lead actor in that. He's a great writer and director as well. The Visitor was so fantastic. Mm-hmm. So he just makes you
uncomfortable when he's on screen.
Yeah.
I feel like...
In a good way.
But I just feel like when I see him on screen, he's just going to punch me in the face through the screen. Like, I just feel that he just gives you that sense of unease with the characters he plays.
Well, the first time I saw him was in Animal Kingdom.
Oh, that's
the Australian movie that gave birth to the series that's on. Mm-hmm. But that was a spectacular movie. I mean, I love that.
That was the movie that really put him on
the map.
On the map in America. Sure. We all saw that for the first time and went, "Who's this guy?"
Yeah. Yeah, you know? And then to discover he's also a filmmaker and not merely an actor. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a really great force. This movie is surprising that it's a theatrical release because it's very dark and very grim. And, you know, I'm sure that
It'd be a good VOD release.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised. There were a lot of people in the theater when I saw it. And and just knowing that there are independent films out there, whether they work for you personally or not. And I loved a lot of things about how this film was made and the like, but it was surprising to see it get a theatrical release. And when a film of that size can do that, that's so good for the genre.
So what's the basic story other than something doesn't come at night?
Yeah, well, basically it's a post-apocalyptic story that centers on a couple who remain and a visiting family comes to their home out in the woods seeking safety from a virus that's killing everybody around. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very claustrophobic thing where they stay in this house to keep themselves protected for that. So that's basically it throughout. It's very simple, very lean, very stripped down. It's darkly lit mostly by flashlights and things. So it's it's a very dark post-apocalyptic thing. Which,
do we know what the budget is? Because it raked in about $6 million its opening weekend.
Well, then it's profitable. It couldn't
have cost more than a couple million.
Yeah.
Because that's good to hear, and that gives me hope, because that was sort of what I was unknowingly feeling was while I was watching The Mummy is I wish I was at It Comes at Night.
Yeah. You know?
But well, opposite kind of attempts there.
Right.
I mean, one is very deliberate and slow and gets under your skin, and the other one is yay, let's go all every minute.
But I agree with you that I'm beginning to feel, unless it's something that it's in the hands of Marvel or somebody. Or as we were both, you know, surprised by how good Wonder Woman was, like that, unless it's something like that where I know they know how to do big budget fun, right?
Mm-hmm. So $5 million budget.
And the box office has done $6 million.
Mm-hmm. I would bet it costs less than $5 million.
Yeah.
Because there's not much to pay for. There's no expensive names. There's this one location.
Above the line.
Yeah, but that the only one would be Joel, and I don't know what his salary would be.
Maybe he got
$4 million.
That's what it was. It was $4 million.
But I'll tell you, my favorite movie of last year was The Invitation, which also was
in one location.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy Jay Larson's in that movie.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film, and I've seen it 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great story and
it's
great
off-putting.
Acting. And
it's
it
really
takes you places you don't expect to go.
Right.
And I'd much rather see that than a $200 million comic book movie in my personal taste. You
know? It's a good thing, and I want to get behind and support more of these movies. I'm sort of split because I ultimately love the movie going experience. I love going, and I
want to enjoy both. I want to enjoy the big spectacle blockbuster movies and the
smaller
ones.
Some are made
ones.
For popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But I want to watch a cool, intense, low budget drama that's really well executed because
that you know no studio would ever greenlight.
Right.
You know that those are the movies that you know you want to see too.
And also too, I think we've talked about a lot on the show. We talked about it in the Eric Griffin Show episode is. The low-budget director has to – they can't hide behind anything. They can't hide behind big effects and, you know, or even big-budget stars kind of coming in and doing their big-budget star things.
Like you can't buy your way into it.
No, no. Right. And you have – so you have to tell a really compelling story. You have to do it with one location.
And you've worked mostly with larger budgets and studios.
Well, not really. I mean –
Oh, you've done low-budget.
I've done a lot of television work, you know, high-end television and low-end features. You know, I'm working on something now that is the lowest budget I've ever worked with. It's an anthology with a group of other filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. But you can't say anything more about it yet?
Not yet. In a week or two, I think we can. But, you know, our editor – has written and directed several features, and they're very well received, and they're really good. He's a really talented guy, but he makes his living as an editor.
Right.
Because an independent filmmaker, if you go direct to video, which, you know, VOD and the like, how do you choose the wheat from the chaff? You know, so the theatrical experience, particularly in the horror genre, is so important to have, and you rarely get it. It's mostly in the world of VOD, where if you have a great setup at home, fine, but it's never going to be the same as a 60-foot screen and the you know, Dolby Atmos and all of that stuff that you can do on a low budget, but it rarely gets in there because it costs so much to promote a movie these days.
Right.
Well, yeah, true, and I think it's a good point that it comes at night. Why it's amazing that it did get through is most of the wide release horror, as you know, is the sort of Insidious 3 and those movies.
PG-13.
Yeah.
Right.
Which it's really hard to be. I mean, you can be horrific and frightening and suspenseful with a PG-13.
Oh, we talk about this all the time, where PG-13 is a broad rating.
Yeah.
You know, you've got The Grudge and you've got Ant-Man. We're both PG-13 movies.
Yeah.
You know, there's a, you know, I feel like there should be something kind of in the middle, like a PG-10 or something.
Yeah. Well, like when we did Masters of Horror, it was made for television, but Showtime aired it. But I was able to say to all these filmmakers, you have Final Cut. You can do whatever you want. And it went really far sometimes, because sometimes when horror needs to be unfiltered and not all of it, you can do The Sixth Sense and have a really tense, incredible story where there's not a drop of blood spilled. Mm-hmm. But then you get Takashi Miike coming in to do Masters of Horror, and that was the one episode they would never air and Walmart would not sell. So, but if you have somebody who really has a
vision.
You
have to get that one on bootleg somewhere?
It's around. You can get it. Yeah. But if you're working with a filmmaker with a vision and you have to put blinders on him, or you're working in a world of commercial television where you have to have every 7 minutes a Pampers commercial or something, you know, it's really difficult to do. And to experience horror with an audience, horror like comedy is best shared. It's not something you want to watch on your own on a 20-inch kitchen TV. You
know? Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I've said there's a lot of similarities between horror and comedy. It's opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah,
they really
and,
are.
And it's so
it's
hard
just a different
for,
emotion.
Yeah, the hybrids usually don't work, but when it does, like American Werewolf in London or something, where it's both scary and funny.
Yes.
God, that's something.
Oh,
to
that
applaud,
also got stolen from with The Mummy. It's
really?
Oh, the funny friend who died, but then comes back and is giving advice.
The Griffin Dunn character.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Yeah, he was in The Mummy too.
Great.
I'm just surprised they didn't cast Griffin Dunn. I mean, so we have an ad.
Oh,
we have a new sponsor today. ZipRecruiter. Are you looking for an employee? Actually, we are.
We are looking.
We are.
For
as soon as we hit that $2,000 mark, we can hire him.
We need to use ZipRecruiter.
We actually might use ZipRecruiter. This is one of those companies that if you're looking for a job and you're trying to find the best candidates, and you know there's a ton of sites online, but how about it's a great challenge to find great talent, and the importance of finding great talent is very important to your business. What ZipRecruiter does, it puts your job everywhere. It's basically a job aggregator. You put your job on ZipRecruiter, it goes everywhere. And it doesn't matter what size business you are, all sizes, the most qualified job candidates, you'll get immediate results.
Well, I was reading too, like, you know, high-end jobs, they're having a hard time filling them.
Yeah.
Like manufacturing jobs, stuff like those, there are not a lot of those positions. But I read this thing in USA Today's business section several weeks ago that it was like, jobs that are like $100,000 or more, real specialty jobs, it's hard to find the right person for those.
Because they're less qualified people for them. And for ZipRecruiter, 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in under 24 hours.
Boom.
So, and why don't you try it for free? Why don't you? Why don't you try it for free?
Yeah. What
That's
are you,
all.
Crazy?
Yeah, come on, do it. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CFN and try it for free. You got nothing to lose.
Come on now.
Come
do
on.
It.
You
do,
need
it,
help.
Do it for your company.
You need help with your business.
Otherwise, a bad mummy movie will
come.
Yeah.
Yeah, Universal should use ZipRecruiter.
Yeah, God. Yeah, do it. Yeah, they should do it for, like, you know, film executives and stuff like that.
Yeah, a Zip Dark universe. So, all right, let's get to some trailers. Let's get to a movie that got me very excited, Black Panther. This one, again, Marvel, they know how to make a movie, know how to make a trailer, got me excited again. You wonder, like, well, how many, you know, new characters can I see and how many times can I get excited about these superhero movies? The answer is every single time.
Well, the thing, I heard something cool that part of the marketing that Marvel is using. So Stan Lee, when he was first writing the Black Panther, like in the 50s or 60s, he took a lot of heat. People were like, you can't have a black superhero and all this stuff. So Stan Lee wrote within the Marvel world that Black Panther has like more powers than anybody and created all of these things, whatever that, what is it, that thing you get from that country that has all the
oh, vibranium?
Vibranium, yeah. It comes from there. Stan Lee wrote all these things because he was so pissed off that, you know, people were saying you can't have a black superhero and all this, you know, racism. Because that character was being written when Jim Crow laws were still in effect. So he made the Black Panther so powerful, and now we're going to see it. We're going to see. I'm just like.
Bulletproof suit we saw in the trailer.
Oh, man. And this whole secret world, the opening dude who's like, you don't really know the truth, you know? It's.
That's Gollum. Oh. That's Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
He's a mocap actor. It's great to see him not in makeup. Talking to Martin Freeman, I know. It was like just everything about that trailer made me excited.
I'm excited. So, Mick, what did you think of that trailer?
Well, 25 years ago when I was making Sleepwalkers, Columbia was developing Black Panther to make it back then.
Oh, wow.
And do you think the trailer would have looked like that?
I doubt it. I doubt it. You know, it looks amazing, and I'm really glad to see movies like Get Out and Black Panther and things representing a part of the audience that has not been well represented before, especially, you know, Wonder Woman did it for females. This, for an African-American audience, is fantastic. I mean, not to sound like the Hollywood liberal vegan that I am.
Yeah.
It's still, I mean, there is a social conscience at work here that can work in tandem with entertainment that I think is really important.
And commerce.
And commerce.
It can't all work together. No, it's a great point because it's, you know, Hollywood. We've talked about this with Tyler Perry films, right? Tyler Perry wisely said, you know, people would tell him, black women don't go to the movies. He goes, you don't make movies for them. So he started making movies for that section of the population that has been completely underrepresented, and boom.
And with a faith-based under.
Yeah.
Faith-based undertone. Oh, the Christians don't go to movies. No, not yet. They will.
Yeah.
And so.
If you make a movie for them.
If you make a movie for them. And so he's shown that, and I'm so glad that Black Panther is going to do that. The trailer looks like the majority of the cast is African American, you know, like, or African.
Great.
Like, it's just like that is like fantastic. We don't see that. He, and especially like what you said since Wonder Woman, we talked a lot about it on the Wonder Woman episode.
Isn't Winter Soldier frozen in Wakanda right now,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, exactly. So let's, we're going to see, this is what Marvel does so well. It's connected to the Marvel Universe, but we're going to see an aspect of the Marvel Universe that we've never seen before, you know, told in a unique way. I'm
fired up to see it.
It's terrible that you have to even consider that part of the social aspect of it,
right.
That we are specifically making a movie for an African-American audience. But fuck the reasons. It's great that it's there.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And may it lead to many more, and not just in the superhero universe, but across all genres.
And shout out to Todd Perry, who is working on the visual effects for the film.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, he was asking me, did you see the trailer yet? How'd you like the trailer? Because they have an incredibly tight timeline for visual effects for all the Marvel movies.
I can imagine. And the other thing too that I love about, again, shows you how Marvel is really getting it. So it's Ryan Coogler is the director, and now he did Creed and he did Fruitvale Station.
Oh, wow.
Those are two fantastic movies. Fruitvale Station is a great movie, and you want to talk about, I mean, it's an actual thing that happened and how he covered it, and it's the first time he worked with Michael B. Jordan, who is also in this trailer, who's a fantastic actor. Chadwick Boseman's a great actor. So this is the thing that Marvel really gets.
And he knows how to tell a story. You know, not just create a spectacle. So many of these are theme park rides and not movies.
Yeah.
And
it lasts too long.
Yeah. And so this is a filmmaker who started doing independent films telling stories and not doing spectacular explosions.
And that's the thing that I think, you make such a great point, Mick, that Marvel does so well. They get good storytellers. Yes, it's going to have big budget because you are watching a summer popcorn. It is a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know it's gonna tell great story. There's going to be character arc within. It's not just talking between explosions just to get us to the next chase or whatever. And it's because they hire directors like this. You know, and it's, I'm so fired up for this, man.
Yeah, they don't hire Alex Kurtzman.
Nope. No, they do not. Or Justin Lin.
<That's>, yeah.
Come on.
The next one is actually Cars 3. And the latest trailer, The Limit, we saw. Now, I have to say, I'm surprised I find myself saying this. I'm actually a little more on board with this movie now. I never liked the first one. I didn't like the second. The second one was not very good. But this one, I feel like they went in a different direction of like almost like a Toy Story 3, where it's almost nostalgic and there's an air of melancholy to it, and where you know, even as a race car, there's that allegory of like, you know, you're not going to be fast forever. You're going to be slowing down. People are going to be passing you. Your time is past. So I really feel like it's going to kind of pull on those heartstrings a little bit. So I'm a little more excited to see this movie than I thought I would be. So, although again, I always say this, a lot of unanswered questions in the Cars movies. When did they become sentient and kill all the people? We still don't know that.
It feels like an animated Logan's Run.
Yeah.
God, that sounds damning.
Yeah.
So any car that gets above 30 has to renew.
Yes.
Renew. Yeah, I don't know. It looks, I must admit, I've never seen any of the Cars movies.
Mm.
This is the one I might see.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's interesting.
I've never seen them either, but there's a thing about Pixar movies is that they're all better than they need to be.
Yes.
Really, they have so much detail that if they didn't have it in, no one would notice.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, from the very beginning, there's been a layer of quality and ingenuity and
every single
creativity.
Film.
There's so much better up. It has so many things going on in it. You know, so many of the films.
Even their misses are like, well, it was still okay.
Yeah, you still swing for the fences. Yeah.
Right.
You know, this is a company that could get by with their movies being less detailed and less rich and less expensive.
Right.
But they go for what they think is the best they can, and the team is all contributing to something. And
Inside Out even flipped the formula a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, normally, these are movies like they're made for kids that adults can enjoy. But I felt like Inside Out was made for adults that kids could enjoy.
There were
so many layers to that movie. So I'm actually a little more excited to see this now. When the kids want to see it, I'll be like, okay, yeah, let's go. So I'll be seeing it this weekend.
We also need to mention Patreon supporter Mike Valdez. For $50
yes.
a month, you get your name and website read on every episode. So go to whoismikevaldez.com.
Check him out.
Boom, mm-hmm. Mikey Valdez.
So, we're going to DVD and Blu-rays next.
The Lego Batman.
Oh, wait. Oh, before we do that, we got one more story we want to hear from Mick about. You have a connection to Star Wars.
Well, yes. My first job in the movie business ever was as a receptionist for the original Star Wars back in 1977. And so one of my duties was doing the personal appearances by R2-D2. So I was the remote control operator of R2-D2. Including the Oscars that year, which is the only Oscars I've ever been to and probably will ever attend. I think it's a very safe bet. But I'm wearing a tuxedo with my Futaba remote control unit and in the green room watching Jack Nicholson leering at Olivia Newton-John, who's wearing a see-through diaphanous gown, and Betty Davis proclaiming after Diane Keaton won the Oscar for Annie Hall, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. So it was thanks to my friend R2-D2. You know, so, yeah. There's a part of my life that's not particularly well known.
I'm glad we could explore
it here.
Thanks for
sharing it here.
Yeah,
I didn't know we were going to get a Betty Davis impression on today's episode. This is fantastic.
Well, I got my SAG card doing cartoon voices. So
oh, really?
Yeah.
What cartoons did you do?
No, it was just Matt Frewer, who was in The Stand, and I became very close friends, and he was the voice of the
Max Headroom.
And also the voice of the Pink Panther cartoons, the TV cartoons,
right,
where he actually spoke. And so he invited me to come to one of the sessions. When I was a kid, I wanted to do cartoons. And so I watched, and at the end of a session where they've got all these actors at a table doing line by line for the cartoon, he had told the producers that I did voices because we were doing them on set, on The Stand all the time with Billy Corso, who was our makeup effects guy. We all did voices. And so they sat me in a little room and asked me to, can you do, what would this guy sound like? Can you do, what would a Mexican horse sound like? Things like that. And I had no idea it was coming.
What would a Mexican horse sound like?
Well, I did a singing Mexican frog in one of the cartoons. So, yeah, after I did like 25 voices or something that I didn't expect to have an audition for something I'd never done before, they called me the next week and asked me to do a couple of cartoons for them. So that's how I got in the Screen Actors Guild.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
Nice. And that's something I've never talked about.
That's fantastic. And that's some good backstage Hollywood business.
And all that stuff helps with podcasting.
There you go. Yeah.
You got to be able to do.
I'll learn from you.
Do it. Yeah.
Give us a jealous Betty Davis. Give
right,
us a,
yeah.
I don't believe it.
Yes. Now, as a Mexican horse.
Well, he only whinnied. The frog sang.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
So let's talk about now DVD and Blu-ray. The Lego Batman movie came out. I know you didn't see this film.
I did not get a chance to see this.
I saw it with my kids, and it was kind of a retread of the other Lego movie.
Oh, really?
It really was. It really felt like this is kind of the same movie. It's just kind of focusing more on Batman. But I will say this. It got the Batman character more right than Zack Snyder ever did. So, Lego Batman movie.
Nice.
More Batman than Batman. So, John Wick Chapter 2, we were talking about this before. I didn't get a chance to see this in the theater. I want to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, the thing I want to make a John Wick, Jack Reacher mashup.
Yeah.
Where
without a mummy.
Where Keanu and Tommy Cruise go out and Wick and Reach It.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll call the movie, Wick and Reach It.
Now, that's an extended universe I could get behind.
Yes, the Reacher Wick extended universe.
The Reacherverse.
The Dudaverse.
Yeah, it's a total Dudaverse. So, yeah. Go see Jack Wick, Johnny Reacher, whatever. I forget their names.
And I want to talk about this. There's a very fantastic column on the site right now. We finally got Jackie Cation to write something again. Mm-hmm. She wrote a very long, wonderful column about Wonder Woman and navel gazing and about why we're having the reactions to this film that we're having, why some of those reactions are stupid.
Right.
And why some of them are correct. And the thing I love about Jackie is she is not stingy with her opinions. So it is a great read. Check it out. It is on the site right now. Jackie Cation, it's Wonder Woman and Navel Gazing.
Fan feedback. We've got some comments from the videos that came out this past week on YouTube. Sarah Smith. So we talked about the American Made trailer last week, and Sarah Smith wrote, Tom Cruise is not wearing a wig in American Made. That is his hair. Sarah seems very adamant about this fact, and a lot of cap letters in this.
All right.
Thanks, Sarah.
Inside
knowledge. So that's his hair. Okay. You know what? I have no reason not to believe her.
Well, I would offer that I don't know. I hear that, and I feel like I'm Betty Davis going, I don't believe it. Right.
No, with an accent.
Yes.
Lady at Giggles just writes, Wonder Woman movie is awesome. Well, right on. Thank you guys for making those posts and comments on. Be sure to go to youtube.com/comedyfilmnerds, and we release a new video just about every day. We'll take this episode and cut it up.
Little pieces.
Frank Pulaski's been doing that.
Yep.
Over on the beautiful island of Maui.
There's going to be a great Star Wars remote control piece.
Hopefully he can drop in a Betty Davis pick from the 1977 Oscars if he can find it online.
Yeah, Frank can find anything
Frank
online.
Frank can find anything online.
And premiering this week, like we said, Cars 3. I am more excited to see this than I thought I would be. Rough Night looks like another ensemble comedy. Everyone's trying to recreate The Bridesmaids, like mm-hmm. lightning in a bottle kind mm-hmm. of thing. We'll see if this movie succeeds or not.
It could be.
It could be, yeah. 47 Meters Down. This is the shark movie that the trailer is just hilarious, where it's like, oh, well, the sharks are aliens. This is the way they're acting. They're computer-generated aliens, and they're acting like, you know, like no shark, whatever.
And everyone dies in the trailer, yeah. apparently. I mean,
yeah. Or they're in a tornado. That's what it feels
it's
like.
Well, it's Sharknado underwater.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really has that feeling of like, okay, well, I think we just saw all the jump scares in one trailer.
Yeah. So I'd rather watch a Sharknado movie.
As a horror filmmaker, when you saw, have you seen the 47 Meters Down trailer?
I have seen the trailer.
Okay. Yeah. And what was your reaction, Mick?
Well, the guy who made it, Johannes Roberts, mm-hmm. is actually a very talented filmmaker and mm-hmm. and a friend. I don't know him well, but met mm-hmm. him at a film festival in the WAC. And I'm going to go.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
you have high hopes for it.
So let me
yeah.
ask you this then. So yeah. since you know him and you know he's a capable filmmaker,
yeah.
when you see a trailer like that, do you think, oh, man, the studio cut this dumb trailer. It's probably better than this.
I have a feeling, yeah. I have a feeling mm-hmm. it was made more independently than as a studio-type movie. And I believe it was his idea and his script. And so who knows? Who knows?
Well,
I'm hopeful.
When I hear that, okay. then I want to go see it.
Yeah. Right.
When I just see that trailer, and we talked about this a lot, we call it trailer side, when yeah. there's a good movie and the marketing department or whatever
yeah.
cuts
completely
together this,
misses it. Yeah.
this trailer.
Or shows too much. Like, I feel like we saw, okay, they're at a party, they go down in the water, they get stuck, the sharks start attacking, they're about to get out of the water, and then a shark's grabbing them out from getting out of the water. So that's how much more of the movie is there.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. what did you think of The Shallows?
I haven't seen The Shallows.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that. Okay. I surf, so I'm not a big I can't watch a lot of shark movies.
Well, it's a one woman versus shark movie. So
yes.
One woman in a tiny bikini versus shark.
Blake Lively going toe to toe with the shark.
For 90 exactly. minutes.
Yep. I feel like I kept thinking I was going to, I just haven't been traveling as much because there's a lot of movies I would just
go. Because of the sharks.
yes, I can't. They're chasing me, Chris. But there's so many movies when I was traveling more, I was like, oh, I'll just see that on a plane. And now that I haven't been, I'm like, oh,
I've missed all these plane movies.
I've missed all these fantastic plane movies.
Some of them are at their best on a plane.
Of course. Yes. It's not like I feel like The Shallows would be like, oh, thank you for getting me to the East Coast.
That's definitely a Delta movie.
Yeah.
Yes. and the last movie coming out is All Eyes on Me. This is the Tupac Shakur biopic. So it looks pretty interesting.
It looks interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just from a casting standpoint, the guy they cast looks
exactly
like Tupac Shakur.
Like Tupac Shakur.
Mm-hmm. So that I'm interested to see.
I don't know if they'd find out later with the, you know, it's all prosthetics, you know?
Or is it like what they did with Straight Outta Compton where they just got Ice Cube's kid? Is it like
right?
Tupac's kid, you know? Like maybe they did that. I don't know. But it looks interesting. And in yeah. the vein of Straight Outta Compton, it's and that's the – I was in – you know, college and listening to a lot of rap when all that stuff was happening and in the 90s. So it's an interesting era to cover. And there was all this controversy around gangster rap and
sure.
everything. And so I'm curious to see how the filmmaker handles it. I'm actually like, I'd like to see mm-hmm. that.
All right. Well, that is our show.
Yes. Mick Garris, where can people find you online, your show, upcoming projects?
Well, the show is called Postmortem with Mick Garris. It's on iTunes. It's on Podcast One. And it's every other Wednesday a new episode comes up. So next week we'll have Neil Marshall on, but the other nine are, of course, available anytime. And you can tweet me at postmortemmg. Mick Garris Interviews has all, .com has all of the old Z Channel interviews from oh, wow. like 1978, 1979. Mm-hmm. People like Jamie Lee Curtis and William Shatner and William Friedkin and
oh,
Steven
wow.
Spielberg, all of these people. And then
This has been a hobby for you. You're actually a yeah. filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I mean, at that point, I wasn't. At that point, I was mm-hmm. a journalist and hopeful screenwriter and the like. And mm-hmm. so meeting those people under those circumstances, and then who knew years later that I would be working for Steven Spielberg as a writer and director and things
wow.
like that. So, mm-hmm. but it's also got the Postmortem TV interviews that I did for FearNet, and it has a link to the Postmortem podcast as well. Working on this feature film that I can't talk about much for another week and a half or so, But
this is the anthology?
Yeah, very, very exciting project with amazing people involved. I'm actually going to go up to Vancouver and direct an episode of Once Upon a Time in August.
Awesome.
So that should be great. And going to a film festival in South Korea next month. So life is
busy,
hectic. Yeah, I mean, writing books, making movies, television stuff, and the podcast. I need to keep busy.
Yes.
It's good to be busy. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Of course, everybody, go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
Yep,
get
please
your name
support
in the credits.
The show.
Support the show. We're being able to do more stuff. Listen to the Mummy spoiler app. You get it early if you're a Patreon backer.
Yes.
And
get anger early.
Get anger early. You can, if you want to listen to my Burn the System Down, political vigilante YouTube show. Yeah. You can listen to that. I have a Patreon. You can support that.
I don't know how you're dealing with this lack of material that you're getting from our political
Yeah, there's nothing going on. Everything's pretty solid.
There's nothing to talk about.
Pretty decent. Things are good.
Every day, it's quiet.
It's quiet. There's
God bless America.
It's a great place. Oh, we can announce this. We will be at Comic-Con again.
Yes, we are. We just got the confirmation.
We're doing the Kung Fu extravaganza with our
Kung
friend.
Fu movie superhero extravaganza.
Absolutely. Rick Myers, this is his 20th year.
Yeah, it's going to be a very special 20th anniversary year.
Eric Jacobus is on the panel, amongst others. If you can go, if you can get it past the Comic-Con.
Thursday night.
It's
8 to 10:30. It's the longest panel at Comic-Con, I think.
It's every year we learn cool stuff.
Yeah.
Rick always brings in
it's
cool
clips. It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's such a blast. And Rick has really been, really gracious over the years to kind of let us come in and help and be a part of it. And
we have a blast every single time. Graham, myself, and Neil will all be down there. And it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, some cool stuff. And I probably be down there I might be doing some stuff for Rotten Tomatoes. So I'm going to be around all week. It'll be a blast down at San Diego. So
yeah, you'll be ready to come home after 4 days.
Yes, I will. I'm going to surf my way back.
Yeah. It's like, I can't be around any more nerds. I'm done. I need a break.
I'm going to have to surf somewhere at that point just to go do it. So. All right. Thank you, Mick Garris, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Sean Merrick, who used to be our intern, then worked at Sideshow, that now works at Podcast One. He set this whole interview up.
Yeah, he's my producer. Yeah.
He's your producer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the man who made this happen. Thank you to our producer, Aaron Brungart. Thank you, Aaron, for bringing your R to your last name this week. We really appreciate that. And, of course, Brenton, who does the social media. When you see those cool clips that come out of All Things Comedy that then we repurpose.
Brenton's doing them.
And everybody here at ATC that's allowing us to do more cool content. Without the ATC studio guys, there would be no clips on the YouTube channel.
There'd be no video because we didn't get to that video buy your own equipment tier.
We skipped it. Because,
you mean there's cameras here?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Whatever you do, don't see the mummy.
Yes. Yeah, we just saved you some time and money.
And if you want to hear us yell about it even more, listen to the spoiler app.
I think it'll be even better if you haven't seen the movie to listen to the spoiler app.
Yeah. It'll save you the time.
You'll be going, what? That didn't really happen in that movie. That couldn't have happened. Somebody wouldn't have filmed that and then went print. There's no way.
The budget is like 100-some million, and it made like 30 over the weekend.
So, which is more than it should have.
Yeah. And it'll have overseas.
Yeah, I know. It'll make its money.
It'll have that precipitous drop off, especially here, where when word gets out, like, all right, everyone who wants to see it has seen it. Now we're done. It'll go down to like, 5 million.
It'll still
make
profit.
It'll make some money. Yeah,
that's a disappointing thing.
Tom Cruise, doesn't matter what he's in, he'll make money.
That's his natural hair.
That is.
All right, well, that's our show. Unless you have more to say about Tom Cruise's hair.
I don't have anything more to say about Tom. I think his hair speaks for himself.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I have nothing more to say about Tom
Cruise's
hair.
Big shout out to TC's hair, everybody, in the Comedy Film Nerds land.
Oh, I did want to mention this one thing, is that people have been emailing about how the graphic novel is going, Long Ago and Far Away. It's coming along. We just hired a professional letterer to actually get it going a little bit quicker. So right now the inking is almost done on the entire thing. We'll be starting coloring and lettering. And also, I want to announce, it'll be really cool. Mark Waid is going to be doing the foreword to the book.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So it'll be really cool.
That's so great. Mm-hmm.
He said, What did he said something I was like, well, I can't guarantee it'll be long, but it'll be sincere. So I emailed back. It's like, no, I want it long and insincere.
Yeah, I want it long and insincere.
Yeah.
Misspell your name.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
So yeah, we're a little behind for sure, but you know, it's we're doing it's a two-man shop, so we're doing it as fast as we can. So
fantastic.
That's where we're at.
Thanks for listening, everybody. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Mexican horse.
I don't believe it.